didn't look good.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Tuesday, the 5th of April. This is the Subcommittee on General Government. Anne-Marie, you're ready to go? We are opening a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 5501, the Department of Administrative Services. When we left off yesterday, we were in the midst of the agency overview. Ms. Warner had just commenced that, and we ended up leaving that part of the presentation. So I ask you to commence where you left off, and perhaps you would get us all on the same page with you in the appropriate binder.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Acting Director for Department Administrative Services. If you look in the first yellow tab that you have under DAS Overview, and if you go to page 27, we were just to begin the budget issues section.
Right.
Okay. And so I'm going to turn that over and move to the first chart that you have there on page 29 called Fees and Assessments. It's a multicolored document. Okay. One thing important about the DAS budget, which Cora talked about yesterday, is that the majority of the agency is funded through fees and assessments. And there are several groupings of fees and assessments that I want to talk with you about. The first group that's on page 29 are fees and assessments that we collect. DAS collects them, but they are for on behalf of other agencies. So if you look at this chart in 0103, for example, the red bar on the bottom is what we call the central government service charges. And the central government service charges we collect support the general fund expenditures for the governor's office, legislative assembly, legislative council, and secretary of state archives. So we really collect those fees and reimburse the general fund from the collection of those fees. The little yellow bar is the Capital Planning Commission, and you can see that the Capital Planning Commission in 0507, the yellow bar, is not there. And that's because last session there was a bill that moved some of those functions to Department of Administrative Services under the Facilities Division, and at this point we have a bill this session that would make that permanent. So there would be no assessment, essentially, for Capital Planning Commission. The little, the pink bar above there is for Oregon, Oregon Minority Women and Emerging Small Businesses Assessment, and that supports that office that works with those particular groups. The blue bar is funding for the State Library, and the top green bar is the funding for the Oregon Law Library that is assessment-based. Now, most of these are based on the number of FTE that an agency has, largely, is how the fees are collected. So we're really the administrator for these.
I know you're the administrator, and you may not be able to answer this question precisely, but the bar for the women emerging a minority, there are pockets of that enterprise scattered throughout state government. Which one of these is it?
This funds the governor's advocate, okay. Lydia, and her support staff people, and they reside in the building across the mall here in the Department of Administrative Services is where they're housed. There is another companion function that's not funded with this that's in Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Thank you.
Okay, if I move to the next page, so those fees and assessments fund other programs run by DAS. The next page is the Department of Administrative Services user fees and assessments, and you can see the red bars are the user fees, and those are fees that are based on volume of usage of our services from each of the agencies that we do business with. So those are like telecom charges. Those are like startup of the workers' comp funds and those kinds of things that run across there. In the blue is what we call DAS assessment charges. And you can see proportionately that the red bars are far more significant funding than what the blue bar is. But the assessments are for funding of activities in the department that are not easily discernible on a per-unit kind of charge. So, for example, the director's office is funded wholly by assessments and the department, and the department, the budget management division is also funded by an assessment process. The main increases that you're seeing across these bars from 0103, 0305, and 0507, there's a significant change that David Hartwig will talk about when he does the state services division, which is in the workers' comp area. If you remember back, some folks that have been here a number of years, we've had reserves in the workers' comp fund because of the law changes that were there, and for a number of biennials, we did not charge agencies for their worker comp costs. We actually paid them out of that reserve. Well, in 0103, that reserve was partially gone, and by 0507, it is completely gone. And so there's about a $30 million swing here where agencies now have to pick up those charges. We also have debt service that Cora spoke about yesterday that is increasing the cost in some of these areas for investments that the state has made in infrastructure. So I'm going to move to the next page, which is page 31, and this breaks out the DAS user fees and assessments by division. So if we talk about this for a minute, the two divisions I talked about, the director's office, which is the navy blue one, and the budget and management division, which is orange. If you look down under 0103 or any one of these on the right-hand side, that is the assessments by division, and those first two, the blue one and the orange bar, you'll notice that on the left-hand side for user fees, there is nothing over there because those two divisions are wholly funded by assessments. The other divisions in the department have both a combination of user fees and assessments, and they will talk to you about those when they go through each of their divisions' presentations. But you can see that those things change over time, and the state services division, of course, the increases there are where that workers' comp increase, that's the kind of pink, bright pink bar, is going up significantly. You can see across those division, those years, and that's mostly related to the workers' comp and tort claims. So if I move to page 32, we talk about budget drivers. The DAS budget is driven by many of the same factors that drive all state budgets, debt service, policy packages, and adjustments that are being made in the base budget. If you look at the debt service list here for DAS, these are items that in the last two bienniums have been invested in by the legislature and the governor. E-government, which is the web-based transaction for all agencies in the Brand Oregon Project. E-procurement, which is the procurement information networks, replaces the VIP system that we previously had. Cybersecurity, I think you've heard talked about. Facilities has debt service on an ongoing basis for their infrastructure. And PEBDOT benefits is the online enrollment system. So we've got debt service from those investments that are increasing what our assessment charges and fees are for these particular services in the department.
I just wonder how pervasive is the effort in e-government, excuse me, to get agencies able to transact business via the Internet?
Madam Chair, we've had a significant effort over the last 12 months in working with agencies to bring them all under that platform. And there's been some that have had problems with doing that that we're working through. But I think at latest count, I think there was about we were about 50% there with the agencies.
Because three of us four of us that sit on this panel saw a presentation from OLCC yesterday, and this is an acronym free zone, I apologize, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and realized just how antiquated their technology is. You can't help but see this video and how they're retrieving data to know that there's something severely awry. Would they fall under the purview of the e-government initiative?
Yes, Madam Chair, they would. And we can tell you where they are in terms of status update. I'll have to get back to you with that.
Well, I mean, the short answer that you would get from OLCC is give us money and we'll get with the program. The big question that I have is the clip that they showed us yesterday is just such graphic evidence of how poorly things are going technology-wise there. Mm-hmm. I was just curious, and I would very much like to know where they are.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to you.
Senator Morse.
Just so I'm absolutely clear, their e-government and technology initiative would be supervised by IRMD and a product of IRMD.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, the e-government project was started last biennium, and agencies have been worked with by IRMD staff. Yes, we had a project manager and technical staff that work with agencies to begin that project, and we engaged agencies in discussions about where they were and how they were going to migrate. Then the agencies needed to work with us in terms of a migration plan, and we had resources to help them do that migration. But they also have to dedicate resources in their agency to make it happen also. So all the state agencies are expected to participate in this project in e-government.
I guess what I'm asking for is verification of who does the planning and who executes the plan and who makes the estimate with respect to the cost.
Senator Morris, basically DAS, IRMD, the Information Resource Management Division staff, are the project managers for this. And so they have worked with the agencies to do the planning. It's a joint effort, though, because it involves what the agency's content is as well as their staff resources and then what resources we bring to bear. So it's a partnership to make it happen. Does that help?
Yes, that's helpful.
If I'd like a little more clarity, if I could. And have you done that with OLCC?
I need to get back to you about where we are with OLCC. I don't know if Dallas knows.
If I may, OLCC and IRMD came forward with a presentation to the House Information Management and Technology Committee, and Mike Zanin is the overseer, if you will, for the Information Resource Management Division of that project, and he testified that, yes, they were working quite closely with them. Does that help?
That does help, but I think I'd like to have a status on where what stage that plan is in, and some more specific information about who's to pay for the implementation of it.
My understanding is that it's an approximate $5 million capital investment to implement, and when you look at the budget, there are no savings being generated anywhere in that budget that I can see from implementing that kind of a plan.
In the
OLCC.
And are they to bear the full burden of that $5 million? Do you know?
I presume we'll get into that this afternoon. But,
There's two entities involved here, and I'm wanting to make sure the information is consistent from both.
Yeah, I'm not aware of what OLCC has in their budget on their side of the ledger, but we know where we are with each agency in terms of status and working with them. So we can have that information to you by this afternoon. Is your meeting at 1:30?
At 1 o'clock.
That would be terrific if you could have it that quickly.
Let's make sure we get you something. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm moving now to adjustments in the base budget, which is on page 33. These are things that are common to all state agencies. There's a salary adjustment and flexible benefit adjustments of 6% that agencies were asked to leave an ending balance for the compensation package the governor has. The PERS charges, these are for the increase in the rates of the pension obligation bonds that were issued. There's inflation on services and supply of 2.4%, and then rate adjustments in our fees and assessments so that we have an ending balance of 30 to 60 days operating capital in each of the particular divisions. On page 34,
Could we go back? I didn't know that I caught the salary adjustments. What factor are we using?
6%.
6%. And does that include?
Cora's saying it's 8%. I thought it was 6.
8%, and that includes STEP and COLA?
Actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to make sure we're talking about the same thing so that I'm not giving you misinformation, the 8% that I'm referring to is sort of a proxy amount that we left in agencies' ending balances for other funds, lottery funds and federal funds, that related to the compensation package that the governor put in his recommended budget as basically a general fund amount for potential COLA increases, flexible benefit increases, et cetera. That's the 8% I'm referring to. If you're referring to the natural roll-up costs for the biennium, there was one merit that was funded within. I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
It's very important.
There's two pieces to it.
And that we understand this. Will you have any kind of a very, very detailed explanation of exactly what all of these roll-ups, inflations, flexible benefits?
Sure. Let me try and give
yourself,
I'm sorry. Cora Parker, for the record, with the Budget and Management Division. Let me try and give a high level. From an expenditure standpoint, what you'll actually see now in agency budgets, you won't see any actual expenditure costs related to any of those potential bargained items. So we did not make any actual expenditure assumption that there would be, you know, a 2% or a 3% or any sort of actual amount. So there are no actual expenditures in the budgets right now. The governor set aside a pot of money. Salary pot is the way that we refer to that. That amount is used to bargain with the bargaining units and to cover general fund costs. We ask agencies during the budget process then to leave ending balance amounts that we could, during an emergency board process, allocate to expenditures that might ultimately be associated with amounts that are bargained. So if you're just looking at line items right now and looking for any roll-up costs related to potential salary adjustments that could be COLAs, could be selectives, could be additional health benefit costs, you won't actually see any expenditures in the budgets right now. You'll see a general fund salary pot set aside, not specific to any agency, and then you'll see that 8% ending balance for all the other fund types left in agency budgets.
We did not see that yesterday in OLCC. In fact,
the 8%?
No, in terms of flexible benefits, we saw an increase of approximately $15,000 per FTE actually written into their budget.
Mr. Chair, again, not knowing the specifics of the OLCC budget, you would see a roll-up from 0103 to 0305 and basically into 0507, those costs that are specific to items that already occurred in 0305. So where the bargaining process during the 03 session resulted in additional costs during the 0305 biennium, and I think the emergency board allocated some of those additional costs for, again, the current biennium. Those amounts do roll up into the 0507 budget. So those things that got us to, I hate to start throwing out specific numbers, but that bring us to the 818 might be a number that you recall from emergency board actions as the current composite rate for health benefits. Agency budgets are partially funded there through the regular roll-up process and partially will be funded via the salary pot or that 8% ending balance process. So it's kind of a mix of both things. I know it's not. We probably could put something together for you that would help to outline it.
If you could.
Yeah.
And make it very, very detailed in terms of exactly what these agencies have been instructed, the assumptions that they've made. Mm-hmm. And maybe even just have an example of an
Absolutely.
Agency of how that plays out. Because what I saw yesterday in that OLCC budget was a huge roll-up in flexible benefits.
Right.
Okay. We'll do that.
And may I add something to your line of questioning there? The 30 to 60 days of operating capital that you leave in the ending balance is... Where does the 30 to 60 day standard come from, and is that different than just general ending balances that other fund ending balances that the agencies have? I mean, is this operating capital for a specific purpose?
Madam Chair, Representative Bakken, the 30 to 60 days is there, so the normal flow of receipts in and out, payments made by the agency, by the divisions, it's so that they don't run out of cash, essentially, because and to cover year-end changes. So it's that kind of operating standard. It's just a cash flow management tool to leave 30 to 60 days, and it's in the ending balance essentially, so that sometimes you might have near zero and other times you might have 60 days depending upon how your bills are coming in and getting paid. And not all bills, you know, some bills come in quarterly, some come in monthly. It's the flow of ebb and flow of that cycle.
What we're discussing, what I've asked for, is a rather detailed list of the drivers for personnel costs and what assumptions have been made and how they roll up and how adjustments in the future are anticipated. Because I'm very unclear. Ms. Parker has explained that, but I'm still a little unclear as I look at the data.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. So I'm moving to page 34 at this point to talk in general. The last item on the budget driver piece of it is policy option packages, and I'm just going to speak to a few here. There's many more in the budget that each division will talk about, but these are a few of the key drivers that you'll see occurring. And remember, DAS, many of these investments are business change initiatives to try to make things more efficient and effective in terms of how we're operating state government. So there's the finance replacement of fleet vehicles using certificates of participation instead of paying cash that you're going to hear about. That package, this biennium, will result in some savings that we'll be talking about with you. The second piece, we're looking at cybersecurity measures to protect the state's computing and network infrastructure. That's an investment that will have debt service associated with it, and the e-board gave approval in January for an issuance of COPs in March to start this phase one project for cybersecurity. We have plans for replacement of the state's outdated human resource information system that you can see in package 361. That's in order to begin looking at it. It's really a study, not a replacement. It's a study of how do we or should we replace that system. We've got continuation of the Oregon Smart Buy project in package 399. And if I move to page 36, we've got continued development and implementation of the computing and network infrastructure consolidation, the scenic project. The building is currently going up, and there will be decisions made around how that is going to look for the package for this department as well as the other agencies associated with it. And then there will be a discussion about continued development of cybersecurity program and a second issuance of COPs potentially for this fall that we'll need to discuss with you. That also will be a major effect on the DAS budget. So I'm going to move to legislation on page 39.
Ms. Warner, when we come back to talk about, and I'm going to give everybody permission for scenic.
Scenic, okay.
When we come back to talk about scenic, one of the things that I still don't understand is whether or not we're putting these 12 platforms in a secure place, but they're all continuing to be independent but with a fence around them, or whether or not the computers talk to each other and you could actually track data across agencies where, let's say, a person is accessing resources in a number of agencies.
Madam Chair, I think we noted that you had an interest in that, and Don Fleming is going to be prepared to discuss that.
Great.
From a technical standpoint when he comes back.
Not too technical.
No.
Okay.
On the legislation, DAS has three bills that were put forward. I'm on page 39, House Bill 2131 and House Bill 2132. These both have to deal with accounting and issues related to collection of debts. And those bills are currently been referred to Business and Labor and Consumer Affairs, and they have not had any movement to date. These are really housekeeping type of bills for us and would result in changes to how those liquidated delinquent accounts are dealt with. So we haven't seen a lot of movement on those.
Again, I want to just ask a question about these. This is just an impression that I have that there seems to be some resistance to turning delinquent accounts over sooner than a year. It disabuse me of that if I'm wrong.
Madam Chair, I'm probably not. John Radford probably better to talk to you about the history of that. My understanding is they have a year to do the collection, the agencies, and then at the end of that time period, if they're not making progress, they need to turn them over to Department of Revenue or a collection agent. So, but I'll have John speak specifically to that if you have concerns.
I do. Representative Smith.
You're thinking the agencies don't want to turn them over?
Yes. I mean, that's sort of just an impression that's been formed in this discussion, and a year seems to be an awfully long time. The quicker someone is in pursuit of a delinquent account, the better the chances of recovery. Common sense would instruct us, I think, that way. But I'm just curious where the pushback is. Yeah.
Well, and John has a particular historic perspective on this issue because we've worked on collection of past due debt extensively over the last couple of years anyway.
And I guess the side piece, if you'll forgive me, is some kind of, I'm curious who owns, for lack of a better word, the problem of the uncollected debt in the state. It just goes up and up and up. And my curiosity is it a responsibility of DAS to be thinking proactively about how to deal with that accumulating delinquent accounts, or whose problem is that?
I think it's everyone's problem, and we take a leadership role, though, in terms of where are we with outstanding debts and working with the agencies to resolve those accounts. But I need to have probably more in-depth discussion when John's up on the controller's division.
Thank you.
For you.
Representative.
Thank you, Chair Jones. Can you bring it down? I just need a little more detail on collection of debts. This is, I guess I'd still feel gray on this issue and what we're even talking about.
Okay, the process.
Yeah.
We'll get you an outline on the process. Okay. That would be helpful. It would be helpful for the whole committee.
Very helpful.
Who does what when?
Yep, that would be great. Fine. Thanks.
The second page is page 40. This is Senate Bill 90, and I spoke to that earlier when I was talking about the Capital Planning Commission. This bill, the legislature suspended the commission in 03, and this bill makes that suspension permanent and moves those functions under the Facilities Division. So that leaves it at that. And that bill has passed the Senate, so it should be coming over to the House.
I think the one piece of this, while I support the direction that last session took and actually when this went through the Senate voted for it, I still am curious, and I think the citizens of the city of Salem would be curious to know, to what degree is there an articulated plan to stay connected with planning functions in the city of Salem to make sure that in the absence of the Capital Planning Commission that communication stays open.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Facilities Division by statute has an advisory board called the Capital Projects Advisory Board that meets to review state agency plans, both their deferred maintenance issues and new construction. And what was done was to add two city members to that particular advisory board, one from the planning side and one from the public work side, so that we actively have city people engaged in those discussions when the projects come forward. So that is the link at this particular point, and that allows for public input and testimony in their processes. Those are open public meetings.
Thank you.
And we've invited the neighborhood associations that used to attend.
Great.
From the city that used to attend the Capital Planning Commission meetings.
Thank you.
So. Okay, I'm going to move to page 43 and go through the breakdown of the DAS budget here. On the first page, this is just a display, another display of the fees and assessments, the $405 million that is coming into the department by division, which is similar to that bar chart that I showed you earlier that was by biennium. This is just for the 0305. And then the next page is on the 0507, shows you $489 million. And what I wanted to talk about on the expenditure summary here, I'm on page 44. If you start at the top of that page, you'll see that the DAS budget is $927 million. There is a whole list of non-operating expenditures that we make in the department that are not for programs that specifically are day-to-day operations of the department. The first one is capital construction and improvements. And that will be Senate Bill 5504, where those decisions will be made.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. What's the definition? What's your definition of capital construction?
Capital constructions are projects are over $500,000 in cost. Now, that can be, you know, we've got roof replacements that are less than $500,000 that will fall into capital improvement, and we've got roof replacements that are more than that will fall into capital construction. So it's just it's kind of an arbitrary line in terms of volume or size of dollar expenditure.
Does the Department of Administrative Services make any direct appropriations to private business for capital construction? Meaning, does the Department of Administrative Service remodel, provide funding for remodeling of or building of privately owned buildings?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we don't provide, if you would say like a grant or something to a private sector entity to build a building, no. We build our own buildings that are owned by the state, or we remodel existing state-owned buildings. And we use private sector contractors to do that.
Right. But just a quick follow-up.
But we don't fund a developer, if that's what you're saying. We don't give a developer funding to build a building.
Wait, I'm just trying to flesh out. This is my first time on this committee,
okay.
First time with Department of Administrative Services. I'm just trying to make sure that $927 million, that none of that money is being used to fund projects that perhaps were not funded through a different department. Economic Development wanted a project done, couldn't get it done for one reason.
That's not the purpose of the Capital Construction and Improvement Funds in the Department of Administrative Services budget. They are focused on either doing maintenance and remodeling work on current existing state buildings that are owned by the state, or building new state buildings or parking facilities. And that's it.
Thank you.
The next item down is the pension obligation bond debt payments that we would make. We talked about those early. There's also the appropriation bond debt payments that need to be made. This is where the state needed to borrow money after one of the special sessions in 01 to handle the cash flow. And so those are payments that have to now be made. There's mass transit tax distributions that we make. Those are payroll charges. There's a PERS blended rate federal payment. We talked about a settlement amount with the feds. You heard the county fairs were here yesterday talking to you. This is their distribution of $3.3 million to them. And then we also distribute for the public broadcasting bond debt service payment. So of that $927 million, about $387 million are for these types of payments that we're making out. Before you get down to the $539 million that you see there, that is actually our operating budget for the divisions. And then if you look down below there, the $539 in operating expenditures are supported by those three categories: CO, certificates of participation, revenue transfers and other adjustments, general fund, which is mostly, as you know, in the health plan policy area, and then the fees and assessments that you see on the next page down on page 45 by division. So hopefully that helps kind of give some perspective. I'm going to move to page 46. Each division presentation that you're going to see. They will break down their division for you so that you can see fees and assessments, because this is the high level, and sometimes that's hard to tell. They'll get specific about their division. And then Appendix D has the price list of goods and services that gives the detail that supports these fees and assessments that you're seeing on page 45. So if you want to look those up, you can see that in Appendix D. And some of you, I spoke to that price list of goods and services about earlier. On page 47, this is the expenditure history for the department by division. The one thing I would note on here, if you go to the middle of that page, the procurement, fleet, and surplus services, that's the division that we combined with risk management, which is one more over. Facilities is in the middle there. So the column on the far right under risk management, now state services, contains procurement, fleet, and surplus, as well as risk. So you'll see that bar go up considerably because it's a combined division. And then on the far right of the page is the Scenic Consolidated Data Centerpiece, which will be in its own bill at this point. But that's the piece that's in the DAS budget. That was the estimate when we put together the governor's recommended. And then the following page, page 48, is the expenditure by division. And you can see that the state services division, and which is risk management, now state services on the bottom left, and the information resource management division on the right, upper quadrant there, are the largest divisions for the department, and the rest of them fall around the grid. I'm going to move to page 49. In addition to the monies we were talking about, the 337 on the expenditure page earlier up there, that DAS are non-operating expenses, we also do other distributions. This includes the federal timber tax revenue that comes in. We distribute out to the counties. We also transfer other kinds of county revenues for lottery that goes out through our department. So there's an estimated $1 billion in 05-07 distributions coming through the department, and there's a list of those in Appendix E if you want to take a look at them. Page 50 shows the ending balance by division in the departments, and so if you look at that page, you can see there's the operating ending balance. That's the dark black. And then on top of that is the personal services reserve that Cora was speaking to earlier that was left in each of the divisions to handle the salary adjustment and compensation package changes if those are bargained. On page 51, if we talk about the ending balance, historical actuals show that the DAS divisions need about 45 to 60 days of cash on hand. I think that was the question you were asking Representative Aachen about, in order to get the cash flow and the obligations at the end of each biennium met. We have that set aside in the budget, and then there's the personal services piece that's there. On page 53, there are questions about vacancies. So if you turn to page 55, these are the number of vacancies by divisions in the department. There's about 100 vacancies. This was as of March 24th, so we have to take a point in time because those change daily. And there's about 900 positions in the department, so this is a little over 10% vacancies that we currently have. If you look on the right-hand column, these are the 20. We have 23 positions that we're currently recruiting for out of that 100. And the information resource management division that's in the middle of the page, half of the vacancies are from the information resource management division. There's 50 of them. We, in the rebuild of the IRMD budget, we're planning to abolish 35 positions there. So you're going to see those changes. And then I would tell you the administrative restrictions that I spoke about yesterday that were in place for this biennium required agencies to leave positions vacant for 30 to 60 days before you filled them in order to generate vacancy savings. And so some of these positions we haven't begun recruiting for would be in that category that we're holding vacant at this particular time.
Is about 10% of the total positions historic?
That is my understanding, Madam Chair, that that's the case in terms of the department having about that average, somewhere between 8 and 12% vacancies at any one time. Depends on what's happening. Here, where we know in IRMD, for example, we're holding those vacant because we had a budget rebuild that we were doing. That's probably somewhat unusual. But the rest of these are historic, you know, regular operating flow. There isn't that much difference in the divisions today than there was last biennium.
Senator Morse.
Question, thank you. The FTEs and positions listed, does that include all of the 100 vacancies?
Yes, this the positions that are
that you budgeted.
Yeah, that were budgeted for. This would include these 100 that are, yes, that are vacant. Yeah, the budget currently has these in there.
I guess the question to Dallas: how do we adjust for these in the final budget?
Mr. Chair, there's a in building the budget. There's a vacancy factor that is computed based on average number of vacancies in time. So you keep the position, but we reduce the budget in a line item for vacancy savings. So that we try to adjust for that way rather than reduce for specific positions that they may need. We'll accommodate in the budget the reduction in the expenditure from vacancies by making a reduction to their overall expenditure authority.
So the 35 positions, Madam Chair,
follow up,
will still be in the budget?
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. No, the 35 abolished positions and those dollars will go.
But they're presently in the budget.
They presently are in the budget. These will be adjustments that we will be making when we get into work session. There, in fact, the Information Resource Management Division, I think Ms. Warner has warned, said a few times, that subject to a rebuild of its budget. And so we will be making a lot of adjustments, puts and takes, to that budget when we get to work session.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to move then to the director's office overview from the agency overview. So I'm moving to page, go to the next tab and move to page 5 here. The core functions of the director's office, this is back to phase one, just kind of a refresher. Basically, the director's office is providing the leadership for the department itself, the oversight for executive branch agencies, the leadership for the enterprise business change initiatives. The internal audit function is here, and the economic forecast function for the state is also in the director's office.
Director Warner, just as a mechanical question, when in executing your requirement to provide leadership for the executive oversight for the executive branch agencies, mechanically, how often do you meet with the other agency directors, or where's that interface?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have a meeting twice a month for all agency heads that is about an hour in length. And for the larger agency heads, we meet once a month with the small agency heads. They tend to have different issues depending on size and scope. So that is the regular scheduled meeting time that we have for face-to-face, but we also have lots of other individual meetings with agencies on an as-needed basis, agency heads and their staff.
And generally, do the agency heads show up for these meetings?
Predominantly, they do. We had asked, it's interesting because we had asked them if during session they wanted to meet less frequently, like once a month instead of twice, and they said no, they wanted to continue meeting twice a month. So you won't have every agency head there every time, depending upon their schedules, but you have probably 70 to 80% of them there, I would say.
And all agencies are fully engaged?
Well, I mean, that's a hard question to answer, but by and large, I believe so. Yeah. We schedule, you know, the governor's office staff come to that meeting, too, and have periodic discussions with the agency heads. So, I'm going to move to page 9, which is the revenue history for the director's office, 0103 compared to 0305 compared to 0507. And you'll notice that there's a decrease in the assessment for the director's office.
Just, Director Warner, we're in the yellow binder, Representative
Thank
Trump.
You.
We're under the second red tab called Director's Office, and we're on page 5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies. Given issues.
I know everybody has lots of responsibilities. No problem. Okay.
Okay. So I've just moved to page 9, which is the revenue history for the division. And I'm under the director's office piece. So the assessments have gone from $4.4 million to $4.1 million in 0507, and that's because we had more ending balance than we needed to meet the 60-day obligation, and so the ending balance was adjusted down, and so that resulted in a decrease in the assessment.
Good question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Can you update me on the 60-day obligation? Tell me what that is again.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the 30 to 60 days operating revenue in each division is there in order to cover the bills that come in and out of the division and is timing related, as well as the end of the biennium closeout, so that you don't run out of cash to pay your bills in the division.
Follow up.
It's a cash flow management tool.
No, I understand that, and I think I'm going to ask silly question, but I'll ask it anyway. How come you folks have 30 to 60 day window for cash flow management, but we're asking other folks to have a 6-month window?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of a 6-month operating cash balance for other agencies, but that may vary.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think the 30 to 60 would probably be more common across the state. There may be some specific agencies who, because of the nature of cash flow within their agencies, I'm thinking State Fair, which is probably not a good one to bring up.
But you're talking ending balance, having sufficient cash on hand to cover a 60-day window.
Right.
My understanding is, I mean, as we're looking at agencies, we're being told
6 to 11 months.
Yeah.
I think what I may do is to ask Dallas on behalf of this committee to get some clarification, because Representative Smith is exactly correct. We've been looking at multiple month balances, 6 to 8 in some cases, and I think that's the source of considerable confusion.
And those are in transportation and economic development.
Uh-huh.
Everywhere. Well, they're everywhere. I have to follow up to them.
But I think some level of guidance out of LFO, so that we're looking at these things consistently agency to agency. And when we're looking at the Department of Administrative Services responsible for giving guidance to the other agencies, and there's this discrepancy, I'm glad that Representative Smith raised it. Representative Ivaki.
And I think part of where that question comes from, too, is when Satish actually told us we're looking at like 3 months to 6 months or more for these agencies as a responsible balance to carry, which was what prompted my question to you earlier. But my question here, you mentioned that part of the difference for the decrease in money here was because you I don't remember the word you used, but you decreased your ending balance.
Yes,
I don't know what that means. I don't know where the money goes when you say you decrease your ending balance.
Madam Chair, Representative Vakian, the revenue coming into the division is based on an assessment where we're charging people for how much services they're getting from us just by the assessment rate. And so what we do is we reduce the assessment rate so that we collect less revenue, which therefore will have a lower ending balance, result in a lower ending balance at the end of the biennium.
Yeah. Follow up.
And do you do that on a projected basis so that you're throughout the year projecting what your balance is going to be and then you adjust during that same year? Or do you wait till the following year and adjust this?
Madam Chair, Representative Vakian, we don't adjust. We don't like to adjust rates during the biennium because agencies' budgets have been set by the legislature. And so if we increase our charges you know, that's a problem for agencies because they're not budgeted for it. We have decreased assessments sometimes if we see during the middle of the biennium that actually we're collecting more than what we had projected we would need. So we have decreased assessments at times to do that. In this instance, we're doing this as the biennium turns over here, where we saw when we built this budget that there would be more ending balance than what would be needed.
Madam Chair, if I may, we will get back to you with some more information about ending balances. But to speak to Representative Avakian, you mentioned that another analyst had mentioned the 3 to 6 month window. Again, specific to certain types of agencies who are bringing in other funds, I'm thinking Liquor Commission because I suspect that that's the budget that you may have been speaking about yesterday. Okay, well, I was taking a guess there. but depending on the volatility of the revenue source for any given agency that you're talking about, that there it could make sense to have larger potential ending balances. So I think we'll look across the state and get back to you about what is sort of that statewide guidance. I would be real, I wouldn't suspect that it's 11 months, that outside window. But there will be some agencies who, depending on the nature of their stream, cash flow stream, will have larger balances, certainly, than what the department is speaking about.
Representative Avakian.
I know that LFO, at several of our requests last session, put out the ending other fund balance reserves on a list of about 483 state accounts. That has not been updated, and I don't believe that the co-chairs have asked for an update on that sheet. I don't know if your department, I don't know if you have any current numbers on what the projected ending balances are for the agencies, but if you do, I think that would be an important thing for us to have as you come back and explain to us what the standard is.
Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, from a budgetary standpoint, the budget documents that you see will show a beginning balance amount, which is, at the time we put budgets together, the projected 0305 ending balance. And then if you look through those documents, you'll see the projection for 0507. So that, at a high level, are projected amounts that you could look for.
Okay.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. How difficult would it be during the interim to have DAS and you folks and LFO get together and put together a standard for ways and means that would say, you know, here's the agencies, here's the commissions, here's everyone, here's what their, this is the amount of ending balance in terms of time, cash flow they ought to have. So that way we as a body don't get hit by every different group with a different story on why their ending balance is what it is.
I think that's a great idea.
And then you could report back to the audits committee or the e-board or somebody telling us, here's the schedule, here's our rationale.
Sure. We can talk with legislative fiscal staff about what that would entail.
I'm going to ask Dallas to mark that, and I don't know exactly where we get back to it, but I think that that's a good idea. And understanding that these would be overall guidelines, there may be some deviation, but at least that way we don't hear a different story from each agency, and particularly when there are new people on a panel that haven't had the opportunity to hear the budget previously, it would be useful to know there's some standardization. Good. Okay.
I'm going to move to page 10, which shows the spending history, basically, of the director's office for the three biennium. And the $4.6 million for 0507 and the .2 there for the general fund is for the Office of Economic Analysis study and on the prison forecasting, population forecasting, and the Oregon, I guess that's it, in the director's office, yeah. Okay. And then the full-time equivalent positions are going up by one position, and if there's a package that does that later on for your consideration. On page 12, you see the legislatively adopted budget for 0305 and for 0507. Not much significant changes. And I'm going to ask Cora to begin on page 13 and talk to you about the base budget essential package and such changes that were made to the director's office.
And actually, I'm just going to go through these really quickly. The base budget adjustment that you see, roll-up of position actions, we talked about some of that already, base positions that are already funded and the costs that increase related to those are included there. Also, you may recall that we had specific other fund balance transfers to the general fund this biennium. That was part of House Bill 2148. When agencies put their budgets together initially last spring and early summer, they had not made adjustments for those potential transfers, so the Budget and Management Division made those adjustments for them. The essential
package. So this is just a technical adjustment.
Just absolutely was a technical adjustment, yes. And then the essential packages, again, I'm not going to go through these in any sort of detail, but package 020, you'll see a package 020 in other agency budgets, the directors, or other division budgets, the director's office didn't have that. And package 030, those deal with, again, personal service adjustments, phase in and phase out programs, and then inflation and price list adjustments related, again, to core existing programs that were previously legislatively approved by this body. And I can, if you have any specific questions, I certainly can answer them.
Representative Smith.
Oh, thank you. I need to go back to page 10. Can you give me a little more detail on why on the spending history we're showing on average a 5% increase per year in spending?
Remember we, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, remember we talked a little bit earlier here about the budget drivers in the DAS budget where you have the personal services cost increases, you have the inflation increases, you have these the policy package that you're going to talk about here in just a minute. So basically those are the things in the director's office that is driving the expenditures here.
10% of biennium.
Well, that you'll see, I don't know if we added these up, that's probably about on average what happened in terms of this division and the assessment charges that the director's office also has to pay for the services in the price list of goods and services.
Can I follow up? Can you send me information? Can I get some type of your support services chargeback plan? Can you send me a copy of that?
Are you Madam Chair, Representative Smith, are you talking about the assessment and what we're charging back for the director's office?
Okay. I want to know.
And again, if you'd provide that to the professional staff for the whole committee.
Okay.
Senator Morse.
Okay. Back.
All right.
Package 060 is simply that, again, another technical adjustment. We added some new account capability to separate IT-related accounts within the system, and we moved out of non-IT accounts into those IT accounts. And then the package 090 was simply another technical adjustment during the budget development process to reflect smart buy savings that we pulled out of agency budgets.
And then the last page on page 16 is the package 404, which is the one position that was transferred into the director's office to deal and consolidate the internal and external communication functions, and it's transferred out of IRMD. So this is just a shifting of positions and usage. Madam Chair, Representative Smith, this package is $140,000, and if I go back and look at the spending history 05-07, the increase between 03-05 and 05-07 is about $300,000. So $150,000 of it is for this particular position, this package, and the rest of it would be the breakdown. We'll get to you of what the other $150,000 is, but it's related to those other charges.
I'm curious, what kind of communications function?
Madam Chair, the director's office has both internal and external communication. The internal for the department itself, among the division kinds of issues, and externally, we do the PIO Council, which is the Public Information Officer group for all the state agencies. We have those folks meet with our communication directors regularly. Part of this is back to how do we coordinate the rest of state government and agencies in terms of activities, and for communication, that's one method that we use to do that. And then we have the project, the e-government project that started, and we've had a staff person in our office work on communication with the agencies and coordination as the business side of those changes with the technical people. So it's taken this IRMD position was largely related to those functions that were involved with the e-government project.
When you transferred the position, was there a reclass?
No. This is just a transfer directly over.
And at what level is this?
This is a principal contributor position, I believe. Not if you're asking, is it an IT position? No, it was not an IT technical position.
I don't understand what the position does.
The position basically works on the communication, both internal, the web functionality and e-government issues for the department itself.
So it does web page design?
We have a web designer now. It does the information content piece.
So it types up press releases?
No.
Let us
get back to you with a description of what that does exactly, both internally for the department and externally with state agencies, because it's playing two roles. And that may be better. I think the description in the package just doesn't sound like it's adequate here to answer your question.
It isn't, and I think we'd all like that. The other thing that I'm struggling with is redundancy, because both in the design of the pages and also in this communication piece, one of the Brand Oregon initiatives was the standardization of agency web pages, and I presume that that was a format, not a content kind of initiative. I don't know where that stands right now, and I should. I'm the chair of the board, but I don't. And I'm just curious, with kind of the proliferation of these information pieces, who they're communicating with, what information's being transferred, what's the benefit that comes out of it, those kinds of questions.
Okay, I think we're ready to move to the operations division.
And I presume you're going to stay and invite Mr. Fink up?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Fink. Come on down.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Fink, and I'm the Acting Deputy Director of the Department of Administrative Services. I'll be presenting the Operations Division budget this morning. I'd like to start on, I'll call your attention to the white tab, Operations Division, and start on page 5 and deliver the good news to you, and that is that since we last met, the Operations Division mission has not changed.
All right.
The division provides the core functions that the division provides to we provide what I would call backroom business services, accounting, payroll, human resources, budgeting services, contracting support to all of the Department of Administrative Services, as well as providing payroll services to 24 small client agencies, which are primarily boards and commissions that have very small staff. The operations division supports the department as a whole, not so much in direct operating business initiatives that ripple out through state government, but we support the operating divisions of the department as they implement those initiatives by providing our business services.
Mr. Fink, I'm going to ask you a really unfair question, and I'm just curious about it. You provide payroll services to these 24 client agencies. And payroll is very specific, and it's easy to understand. To what degree, if you were called upon to manage any of the other backroom functions of those little agencies, could Department of Administrative Services provide that? For example, accounting, for example, human resources for any of them? What I'm getting at is we have a lot of little agencies, many of which buy services from you, and I'm just trying to figure out what other savings could be realized by amalgamating any of their other backroom functions that are common to all of them.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, DAS does provide a number of those functions through the Shared Client Services Unit of the State Controller's Office, the accounting function, for example. we only, DAS payroll only provides a payroll function, but many of those other support or backroom business service functions are provided to the smaller boards, commissions, smaller agencies through the shared site client services unit, the controller's division.
Let me drill down a little further. But right now it is an election to come to DAS to buy those services as a fee for service, is it not?
I believe so.
What I'm trying to get to is that in my service in the legislature, there have been a history of some of the small boards and commissions getting into serious financial trouble because they lacked, in my view, any kind of oversight. There was no alarm sounded as it became clear that they were spiraling out of control financially. And I'm just wondering how, if there was some kind of a non-elective situation where they were required to purchase backroom services from DAS, assuming that the backroom service provision didn't affect their mission, their constituent interaction, their advocacy on behalf of their professional association or whatever it is they're doing, but simply gift receipting, payroll, accounting, and some way to observe whether or not any of those little agencies were getting into a precarious financial situation that they may not be able to recognize themselves because they don't have a depth of folks doing their oversight.
I'm pleased to be in a position to agree with the chair that I'm not in a really good position to answer that directly. I think we would have to... I suppose any answer I give you today, Madam Chair, would be an answer by anecdote, and I guess I would rather be able to take a broader look at who's out there, what their situations are, because all these agencies vary slightly in terms of how they're staffed to provide these functions and do a more comprehensive assessment before.
That's a fair answer, and just if you wouldn't mind giving it some thought and sure. As you maybe have some thinking about it, and to be less oblique, where I'm going is to say that if it could be demonstrated that there was clear savings in the amalgamation of backroom function that didn't get in the way of the mission, that there would be a requirement to get those backroom functions from you. Okay, thanks.
I'm on. Let's see. I'm on page 11 now. Changes in the past 10 years. The operations division has sort of been an evolving function within DAS. DAS has slowly, since about 1999, has slowly started to consolidate its business functions in the operations division as it sort of made sense, as we identified those functions that were out in our operating divisions that it made more sense to either for management control purposes or to gain efficiencies. We consolidated them into a single unit. We've been doing that since 1999, and you'll see a little later on in this presentation there's one package to actually continue that consolidation. Program improvements and costs.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. I apologize for interrupting. I can't find the answer. How many employees are under your control?
There are, to be precise, there are 60 employees for the 0507.
I apologize for interrupting. I just couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
In the division, we've been doing a number of things to try to not only improve the service delivery that we provide, but also become more efficient. A couple of examples of those is we've gone to document imaging instead of paper filing, which not only reduces the amount of physical space that's actually required to manage documents, but it reduces the number of lost and misfiled documents and the amount of time the staff have to do research to find documents. We've also consolidated a number of individual standalone printers and copiers that we had on the fourth floor over at the executive building into two printer copier units so that we actually have reduced the amount of maintenance that we have to spend on our computer peripherals by consolidating those into those copier printer units. These are small savings, but I think that as much as anything, they establish a culture in the division of looking for opportunities to become more efficient. Other cost drivers in the operations division budget are maintenance of our automated systems, particularly our invoicing and disbursement systems. They're old, kind of rickety. This is probably a story that you've heard a lot here, but these systems from time to time require unscheduled maintenance that drive up our costs just because of their age. And, of course, we have business process changes that we make as a result of audits to improve management controls in the division. And those business process changes sometimes unexpectedly drive up costs.
I don't know that I know who owns the solution to this problem, whether this is an operations problem or it's an IRMD problem. But to the degree that we have heard repeatedly from agencies, big and small, our systems are rickety, they're subject to unscheduled maintenance. Who owns worrying about that? It seems to me that it leaves the impression of sitting here listening to agency after agency say it, that we have a lot of pretty unstable systems doing some pretty necessary work. And is it within your purview in operations to make certain that every agency has Plan B? Who owns that problem of these antiquated, aging, rickety systems?
I suppose, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I suppose I would say that probably within DAS we own the problem. The operations division owns the problem for our systems. I think what you see as departments come before you is you see kind of the legacy of a long history in Bergen of having basically each agency to be pretty independent in terms of its IT planning. And so it's all those maintenance of those systems and redesign of those systems has fallen to individual agencies rather than becoming viewed as an enterprise effort. I think Don Fleming, when he's here next Monday, we'll talk to you a good deal more about the how IRMD is taking leadership role to look at those systems and the maintenance and design of those systems at more, where it's appropriate, more as an enterprise effort than as an individual agency acting on its own effort. The individual agency acting on its own sort of approach makes this very expensive. Some of these systems are fairly large, and to look at a redesign of some of these systems is pretty darned expensive. We should be looking for more opportunities across the enterprise to find systems that will work for everybody, that we can maintain as a single system rather than, you know, 15 different invoicing systems across the agency. But I'm not going to get out of my league. I'm going to let John talk with you about that.
You might, just as a courtesy to a colleague, let him know that that's an area that we're curious about. Simply because I'd like the reassurance that somebody has sufficient ownership over this problem that a critical system can't go down someplace and end up being very impactful through our whole budgeting process. I'm thinking of a tour we took to the Department of Revenue and hearing from some of the women that work there concerns about old systems and the fact that they're processing as many documents as they're processing. I just would like to know that on somebody's worry about list is making sure that agencies have done thoughtful enough planning that if some of these older systems have something go severely wrong, that there's a plan. Representative Bakken.
This issue was touched on in so many different ways, both in terms of the upgrading the technology that agencies are using and information systems like between law enforcement agencies or education districts. And you're the first person that I've heard mention taking the little fiefdoms and creating one enterprise. You didn't use the word fiefdom, I did, but and creating an enterprise. And was that just a notion that popped out of your head? Is there an actual plan to start consolidating both the technology and the information systems between the agencies?
Madam Chair, Representative Avakian, Don Fleming, the state CIO, and I started work at DAS on the same day, and I've had this drummed into my head for the last year and a half by him, that we really need to start looking at places where it makes sense to look at our systems as enterprise systems rather than maintaining a whole bunch of little systems out there. Now, there are some places where it doesn't make sense to do that. But where it does make sense, it's much more efficient, it's easier to maintain, easier to upgrade, if in fact we identify those opportunities and we start to view those systems and enterprises.
Well,
I give all the credit to him. Yeah.
What I'm getting at is, are you two just discussing it over ham sandwiches, or do you actually, is there something actually being implemented to accomplish that?
Madam Chair, Representative Vivakian, no, I don't think it's just a discussion over ham sandwiches. I think Don is deadly serious about this, and it is part of the IRMD strategy, and he'll be talking with you about it.
Senator Morse.
Of the total universe of agencies, the 24 that you manage, what percentage is that? And I don't know. I've never added up all the discrete agencies.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, you're speaking of the 24 client agencies that we provide payroll for?
Yes.
Off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you, but I can get that information for you.
Could you bring us that
list?
The other thing that I'm still waiting for from the agency is the comparison of the assessment to some of those little agencies. We hear a lot about the assessment in the abstract, and what I'm really looking for is the list that shows little agencies purchase service. Oh, I see hand signals going back and forth.
It may be in your mailbox upstairs, Madam Chair. I have it in mine.
Oh, lovely. Good. Because I think that will help some of us that need to see the visual, understand the acceleration. First of all, see the list of the agencies. And second, understand the acceleration of the charges to the agency. Dallas.
May I add, Madam Chair, with that list of agencies you provide payroll services to, it might be helpful if you list the number of personnel in each. So you get an order of magnitude.
Certainly will.
Was that responsive to your question?
Yes, but I think Representative Vatian is on to something that we need to somehow, I think, give some inertia to. And when we, get deeper into this budget, in evaluating the services that can be provided from an enterprise consolidated basis where it makes sense, what kind of savings would accrue to that kind of approach?
Well, and I'm, Madam Chair.
Representative Obama.
And I'm hearing you, I guess what I'm inferring is that you're thinking in broader terms than just the 24 that you're contracting with. It sounds like you're envisioning a consolidation statewide.
Madam Chair, Representative Vivakian, and I don't want to let you lead me too far out of my league here. But I think that's the overall strategy for IT does suggest that there's a larger way to look at the way we do IT in the state than just agency by agency by agency.
Senator Morse.
Would this have anything to do with the software that we're using in the open source as opposed to Microsoft?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris said it's finally happened. You're way over my head now.
Okay.
We
can hold that question for Mr. Flynn.
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question. How many days do we have the department with us?
All this week and all next week.
May I ask a question?
Fire away.
Thank you. I'm going through your revenue categories in this book. Can you explain what's sales income?
Madam Chair, Senator Smith, I really can't explain right now, but I can get the information for you. There are a number of areas in which the department sells goods and services. State surplus is one that comes to mind.
The reason I ask that question is I guess I'd just like to know over the next 2 weeks, Madam Chair. And again, I'm new to this budget. Is I just like to know how their revenue flows in, and we've taken a first cut at that, and I appreciate that. But there's several categories in here. I'd like to know how that works, and one of them is sales income.
Okay, if you
we can certainly do that.
Mark that. Okay, please continue, Mr. Payne.
I'm on page 21 now. The operations division is funded by an internal assessment of other DAS divisions. So they are essentially...
But that's a quick interruption.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. That's not accurate. Because according to this, that other assessment is $9.2 million, sales income $7.6 million. And so, yes, the majority is... from assessments, but there's a major source of income right there.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, there is the internal assessment of DAS for our services. We also sell services to the small client agencies, the payroll services to the small client agencies.
Tell what that is.
And we also handle a number of pass-through payments to other state agencies and levels of government. So there are a number of categories.
So that sales, just really quick, that sales perhaps isn't sale of property, that sales of service. That's providing services to these other agencies and what they pay for that. And that represents about 47% of the income.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'm going to take a shot at this again. I don't have the information in front of me that you're looking at, but I believe that the seven-something million you're speaking to is all pass-through income. If you look at the expenditure element of the operations division budget, it's a little over $9 million, I believe. And that $9 million relates to the assessment amount that they're bringing in, which is that same $9 million. Then you would see money passing out of the operations division that was equivalent to the $7 million, roughly, that you're speaking about related to sales income. That's just a shot. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think those work together.
What I would ask, Madam Chair, and I'd leave it truly to your discretion, is if we could take, over the coming days, if we could just take one of these areas and have you walk through line item by line item how your revenue comes in. And it doesn't have to be this one. Let's take a couple days and prepare for it. But I'd like to know before I leave session how this all works.
So, certainly, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we can do that.
Okay. We're at a little bit of a stopping point right now. I just feel us getting further behind, so I'm going to, just to let the committee know where I'm headed, do the operations division and try to finish that up and leave enough time to do the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research, because that ought to be relatively quick, and then end with the Mr. Hill, and we'd start there again tomorrow.
I'm back to page 23 now, which is the full-time equivalent. You'll see there's a reduction in full-time equivalents in the division for 05-07, and that is primarily the result of a number of puts and takes, but the largest one is that we're transferring an IT unit, which was 20 FTE, out of operations to IRMD. You'll see on page 24 the comparison of the 2003 legislative adopted budget to the governor's recommended budget, and again, it reflects that the reduction in total funds expenditures, primarily the reduction is resultant of transferring positions out. The governor's recommended budget continues the core functions of the division. It proposes a number of further business consolidations. It proposes a transfer of 20 information technology positions from operations division to IRMD. It proposes a transfer of 9 what were formerly business support positions in IRMD into the operations division as part of that consolidation I spoke about earlier.
Are these all transferring straight across, or yes, are they reclasses?
Madam Chair, they're transferring straight across. If there are reclasses, if there will be subsequent reclasses, they'll be budget-neutral reclasses.
Question, Representative Smith.
Thank you. Were any of those tech positions, were any of those limited duration positions?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't believe any of them were limited duration positions. And there's also the transfer of 1 human resources position from operations personnel to the human resources services division in DAS. That's primarily to make our use of that training function a little more effective. Couldn't do much with one person, but we can draw on all of HRSD. Those changes are reflected in packages. 403 is the IRMD transfer, the transfer of the business services position from IRMD. Package 410 is the transfer of the information technology group to IRMD. And package 421 is a transfer of the training specialist from operations to human resources services division.
Just reminding Mr. Fink, IRMD is a big piece of what DAS does, but we're giving up all of these positions in a restructuring. Touch briefly on how it is that you can accomplish what IRMD is trying to do, simultaneously moving all these people out.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can only speak to these 20 positions, and I think I would let Don Fleming speak to the larger picture of IRMD. These 20 positions were basically, they were there to support desktop services within DAS, and some develop some desktop applications for DAS employees. We really felt that we would get greater efficiency if we simply purchased those services from IRMD, where there was a broader pool of skill and resource available to meet any individual or particular need that we had. So we transferred that resource to IRMD, and now we can draw on all of IRMD when we have a particular need in the department. One last thing that I'll touch on here is the key performance measures. When I was last here, I mentioned that we didn't have any key performance measures that are measured officially, but we had a number of measures that we used to look at our division operations, and those are listed under the key performance measures section. I don't know if in the interest of time, I won't go through those individually unless you'd like me to, Mayor.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little cranky this morning, so I'll please take it in that context. Can someone in the department share with me under expenditures why we have per diem under salary and wages, and then we have in-state travel and out-of-state travel as services and supplies? How come those aren't put together? I assume they're connected in some way.
Parker?
Let me confirm what the question is, first of all. You're simply asking about the account names, that basically the account name is salary and per diem, and then that travel and in-state and out-of-state travel are in. That's the account structure that's been set up for a number of years. I think per diem, I'm not going to explain this very good, so it's probably just better that we get back to you with maybe a brief snippet. I understand.
From a citizen legislate position and transparency, why is one here and other there?
Sure. I think it's a definition of how we use the term per diem versus the per diem that is typically charged by yourselves, commission members, et cetera, but we'll get back to you with a brief answer of why that's structured that way.
I'm going to ask Dallas to flag that. And maybe some of his crankiness is coming off on me, but I got one too. On the performance measures, page 34, 90% of receivables collected within 90 days. That seems to be at odds, again, with this 1 year, 90 days. Why is it one standard here in legislation that discusses a year?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in 1991, I believe, it was way back, we didn't do a very good job of collecting our receivables in a fairly short period of time. We had a lot of aged receivables out there, and the Department of the Operations Division since then has really made an effort to aggressively make our collections as quickly as we possibly can. And we've worked that down and worked it down over time to where we now have performance at about this level. We're actually going to take a look at that measure in a different way next time around, when we look at the amount of the outstanding rather than the number of the outstanding.
You're chasing, though, agencies, not individuals.
That's right, Madam Chair. And so we have a little, we know where to find them.
Yeah, that's the big difference. I answered my own question. Okay, plow ahead.
I think that concludes my presentation, Madam Chair, if you have any further questions.
Senator Morsak.
One other question. In your performance measures, number of loss and restricted work days due to workplace injury personnel. Okay. What kind of training do you have to reduce the number of days lost to injury and health and so on? What goes on?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, there are a number of actual training. There are a couple of I won't say a number. A couple of training classes that we put on both through our personnel unit within DAS. We take advantage of risk management and safety classes that are put on by the risk management division for employees. We also have a DAS safety committee that does regular safety inspections of the workplace, points out to the manager who's responsible for that physical area of the workplace safety risks and asks for corrections of those. So the program kind of is ongoing and continuous. I hope that answers your question.
So you have achieved positive results then, from what I'm seeing here?
Yes, sir, we have.
Okay, any other questions of Mr. Fink? I got one for you, Mr. Fink, before you leave. It sounds like you're doing some terrific stuff, but on page 38, your customer survey indicates you're headed in the wrong direction.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it doesn't look good, does it? just quickly on that, the current DAS customer survey, and actually for both of those years, it only contains two questions about the operations division, and they both have to do with our accounts receivable unit. I know in the next iteration of the DAS survey, we're going to broaden out and get a little more expansive view of how our customers view the whole division. So this is really based on two questions. The answer to your question is yes, but it's a very limited sample of opinion.
Good. Okay. Any other questions before Mr. Fink leaves us? All right. Dr. Goldberg. The reason that I'm doing this is that I know that one of our colleagues has some specific questions that he's interested in engaging Mr. Hill. Hopefully you will be the picture of brevity, and then we'll move on with Mr. Hill.
I will do my best. For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research, here to talk with you through our Phase 2 presentation succinctly and rapidly. Our mission is before you to help the state achieve a high level of quality health care at an affordable cost. We do that through a number of means, primarily through data collection, monitoring, and evaluation of state health policy analysis, and information to legislators and the governor.
Doctor, do you use your own internal processes to decide what subjects you're going to undertake for review, or are you asked to respond by the legislature or the governor? When you scope your year's work, how do you know what you're going to do?
Madam Chair, we do that in both ways. We work with legislators, the governor's office, the health policy committees. They have a number of questions that they are very interested in having us evaluate, and we do that, and that's what helps us scope our work. We also do some ongoing work in terms of planning for the Medicaid program and changes that may occur that we do in conjunction with the legislature, DHS, as well as with the governor's office.
Instructed by a number of town halls that I did over the weekend, a recurring theme that I heard one group independent of the other was the cost of insurance and the availability of insurance for working Oregonians and the total percentage of salary eaten up by buying insurance. Also, the problem raised when people switch from one plan to another, doors closing behind them. They were a 60-year-old, ordinarily healthy person shopping for a better deal moves from one vendor to another and finds out that the door closed. To what degree are any of your initiatives going to speak to the issues that I think Oregonians are interested in with respect to affordability and availability of insurance products on the market?
Madam Chair, there's no doubt that the affordability of health care is the number one pressing health problem for all of us, for the state in terms of affording health care for low-income populations, for businesses, for individuals. We address that in a number of ways. Work that we do, first of all, in looking at where those costs are. Secondly, in looking at things such as how do we advance electronic health records, which will help make the healthcare industry more efficient. Looking at the work we do around reporting cost and quality information. One of the issues about healthcare and one of the reasons it's so expensive is that actually no one knows what they're buying. You have no idea what anything costs, and furthermore, you have no idea what the quality of that is. No idea whether a $100 drug is 100 times better than the dollar drug or the same. So we do a lot of work in terms of cost and quality that helps bring costs down as well. So we look to address that in a number of ways, and I think the last way we address that and most profoundly is one of the issues is cost shift. And the fact that we have so many uninsured individuals, and to the degree that we can help put in plan for the type of programs that can spread the healthcare dollar and help cover more individuals, will help make healthcare less affordable. This is a huge problem, and it's not just Oregon specific. And this is what we do every day.
Thank you. You're on page 7, I think.
I'm on page 8.
Page 8.
How's that?
That's great.
In terms of how our office has changed in the past 10 years, the office began as the Office for Oregon Health Plan Policy. And it began when the Oregon Health Plan started as a policy office for the Oregon Health Plan. It since developed to the state's office, in essence, for health policy. Between 1997 and 2001, the legislature expanded the responsibilities of the office to provide oversight and evaluation of the Family Health Insurance Program, analyze the Medicaid demonstration project, to work with the health division, to do community grants, to support the work of the Public Employees Benefit Board, and to staff the Racial and Ethnic Task Force. 2001 to present, our responsibilities were expanded further to work with DHS on the practitioner-managed prescription drug plan, review Medicaid waivers. The Health Policy Commission was established and put within our office. We were tasked with reviewing the Oregon Health Plan capitation rates, and the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, the bulk purchasing program, was established and put in our office as well. So we've been looked to carry out a number of responsibilities. I think that addresses one of your previous questions.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Under your revenue section, is a portion of your budget based upon fee assessments then from all the other, what's other funds? You got $2.3 million in other funds.
Yes. Representative Smith, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we do not collect fees routinely. The other funds are primarily two things. They are federal matching funds. We take state dollars, and for the work that we do for the Oregon Health Plan, we can get Medicaid match for that. And that's a large portion of our other funds. And in addition, we go out and solicit grant funding, such as what I was before you speaking about a couple of weeks ago. And so those are the two major sources, I think actually almost exclusive sources of other fund, is Medicaid match and the grant dollars that we go out and get.
So you take 1.3 general fund and leverage it into 5.2 total?
Yes.
That's pretty good.
We're doing our best.
Thank you.
Dr. Goldberg, are you ever able to access any private foundations for project-specific work? I'm thinking about the Northwest Health Foundation.
Madam Chair, we do. We get private foundation funding from some national private foundations, and we have applied to organizations like the Northwest Health Foundation.
Thank you.
In terms of professional services and purchasing contracts, a lot of that $5 million that Representative Smith referred to, we actually contract out to get our work done. We contract with university researchers at OHSU, at University of Oregon, at Oregon State, at PSU, to carry out a number of the research projects. We identify the questions with the legislature, contract out the work with skilled researchers. We've contracted some of the benchmark work. We if we need actuarial work, we don't have an actuary on staff. We contract out for that. We contract with a prescription drug benefit administrator for the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. In essence, when we need professional services, we contract that out. And one of the primary reasons is that, given the fact that we have a limited amount of general fund, we can't count on having a retinue of skilled professional staff. And as a result, as projects come up, we purchase the services as we need them. Program improvements and cost containment. The first point is we do partner with other state agencies such as DHS to maximize all federal fund matching opportunities. And by doing that, we've been able to reduce our service and supplies and our general fund budget by obtaining grants and using other funds. The office used to have more general fund than it receives now. As that has come down, we have been successful in leveraging other funding sources. We try and use those dollars as carefully as possible. An example of that is we have a number of commissions that we staff through the office. We're now moving to video conferencing to save on travel for commissioners. So we have people coming from Baker City and Bend. Number one, they don't need to travel and spend a whole day traveling for a three-hour commission meeting, and we're able to actually use video conferencing quite successfully and carry out very productive meetings at a great savings.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. What's the special payments to the Human Services Department?
Can I let Cora?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, that is actually the provision of dollars to OMAP and then the Office of Medicaid Programs, right? Assistance Programs.
And right.
So that money leaves you folks.
Correct.
Goes to them and gets matched.
Is leveraged and then returned to the department as
Got
other
it.
Funds.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Lastly, in terms of cost containment, the work of the office helps save the state dollars in terms of the Health Resources Commission. Their evidence-based drug work saves the state approximately $8 million per biennium. The prioritized list from the Health Services Commission, the list for the Oregon Health Plan, saves the state approximately $45 million per biennium. In terms of our budget, you have a bar chart of our spending history, and what you can actually see is in 2001-03, we had 1.35 in general fund for what was at that point the existing programs that we had. In 03-05, we continued to carry out those existing programs, and we were added two additional responsibilities, the prescription drug program and the benchmark rate setting, for which we were given $470 million. And you can see on top of that the other and federal funds that we leverage with that money. And then in 05-07, in essence, we are...
No, I think Dr. Goldberg misspoke himself. We were all looking dazzled when you said $470 million.
That sounded pretty good.
I think you meant 1,000.
Yes, thank you.
We all looked
a zero
bad.
Here, a zero there.
You know. Running for governor.
I was trying.
Hope burns eternal.
Well, actually, I'm glad you're listening. $470,000. Thank you. I stand corrected. Yeah, I dream a lot. and then we come to 05-07, where we're looking at the combination of those bottom two boxes of a $1.38 million budget and $3.53 million of other funds and federal funds. And that you can see that on the next page in numbers, but I wanted to present that to you graphically.
Question. Representative Smith.
Can you go back to donations and contributions? Who would make a donation to the state of Oregon? Who makes $130,000 worth of donation?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'd have to look into the detail for OHPR to understand what that line item is. I don't have that in front of me.
Just a curiosity.
I'm curious as well. We do collect, reports are sold to some people, but I can't imagine that we collect $5 for a report to handle the and for tapes of meetings. I don't imagine that's $130,000. So we'll look into that. Because my question would be, why can't we get some more? people are giving us 130. Maybe they can give us two.
130 million.
Right. In terms of personnel, full-time equivalents, 03-05, we had 14.83, and we're looking at 16.75 in 05-07. In terms of the governor's recommended budget, the budget continues our core functions. It increases staffing by three positions, and I'll go through that in the policy packages that follow. Increases our ability to use private and federal foundation funding. That's the leveraging that we do to turn that $1.3 million into $5 million. In terms of the policy packages, I don't know if you want detail on those or...
We do, Doctor, at this point, because I'd like to finish your portion of this presentation.
Well, there are the essential policy packages. Corey, you want to speak to those, and then I'll talk about the policy packages.
Sure. Again, the items are similar in nature to what we reviewed through the Director's Office and the Operations Division, so I won't go through them with any detail unless you have questions. The one item I'll note that is different, you see a significant phase out of one-time costs in package 022. Those were one-time items that were approved by the emergency board, and those items have been removed from the essential budget level for the department. Otherwise, all of those essential packages are pretty generic as far as the types of things that they include.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm concerned that you don't have a lot of money in for employee training. I would think you folks need to be staying at the front of the curve.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I would love to budget more for that. Part of the training that we do and are able to do is through some of the federal funds grants that we get, and some of the grants actually allow us to send people for training, and so there is some dollars in that.
But follow up.
But
we're seeing the federal funds coming in as revenue, but we don't see where they're budgeted for the training. What am I missing on that? I only see $2,800 for training.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I can give you a complete accounting of what we've spent on travel and training. Some of the, I don't know the line items you're looking at, but certainly some of the travel that we do is training. Actually, most of it is training.
Just last comment.
Well,
what I might suggest for the department as a whole is I'm going through this book. And I'll be going through it for the next 7-8 days. I'd encourage whoever there is out there to
bring it with
you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I've made that note already to bring that detail book for tomorrow so we can be on the same page.
Perfect.
But I think you've touched on an interesting point that suffuses your whole presentation, and that is this is a very important, very modest little program that leverages the state dollars at about a rate of 1 to 5. And I'm curious how much of your time is taken away from doing the it that you're supposed to be doing for Oregonians to pursue the hunt of federal dollars. And I think that we don't have to have an answer right now, but I certainly think that that's a problem. When you rely on the largesse of others, it's sort of the shark syndrome, just swim and eat, and you don't have a lot of time to do much else.
Madam Chair, you're correct. That's the reality. And the alternative for the office has been to not do that, not swim, not eat, and perish. And I think that we, you know, from my perspective, we supply a very important function. Healthcare, as you started the presentation, is on everybody's mind. It's a huge issue. And we don't invest the type of resources that I think we can and should do as a state. But I do what I can with what I have.
You're making my point. I mean, in dealing with these issues that affect the constituents we represent, I would look to certified smart people, as Representative Smith characterizes you, at the front of the curve to inform our decision-making. And it just seems to me that while this budget is what this budget is in these times, that we ought to not be unmindful of the value that you confer in making decisions in probably one of the most complex areas before the legislature, and that if we want good data, you end up paying for good data, and we just shouldn't lose track of that.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Well, let me then go through the four policy packages that are germane to the office. Package 161 simply takes some Robert Wood Johnson Foundation money that we have that we use to evaluate the Oregon Health Plan. It's what's allowed us to look at what's happening to the OHP Plus and OHP Standard population and to match that. And that's what that policy package is.
Okay.
Package 162 is a package to support the Health Services Commission medical director. This was, in essence, the recognition of history. This position has been a limited duration position for 10 years that we have continued to fund. And merely what this package does is recognize that we have been doing this for 10 years and allow the office to fund the position and save the time and effort that goes into redoing this every biennium.
Good question.
Representative Smith.
How much time does it take?
To do that?
Yeah.
I can't give you an estimate in minutes, but in terms of the discussions with our office, BAM, LFO, discussions here, I would say 50, 60, 70 hours of people's staff time combination.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think the larger issue too is the sustainability of the position. If you're constantly in a limited duration position, getting a staff person in there that you can, you know, today say, I'm going to have a job on July 1, and there's some stability there. With this type of a position, I think you really want that stability, and that's what the office has been fighting for and what they finally were able to convince us to support. So I think that's part of the issue there as well.
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Package 163 is the Oregon Health Policy Commission staff. We were given this responsibility by the last legislature, and we would like to, for the similar reason to the Health Services Commission, establish the appropriate staffing for that, and are doing that as well through the federal fund matching dollars. And then lastly is the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. This, too, was established by the last legislature. This is the bulk purchasing program, which I actually understood you wanted some more information on, and I'm happy to provide the committee on that either today or some other time. This $350,000 is the total funding for that program.
Thank you. Not today. We're almost out of time, and I'd like to make it through your portion of this. And if you can talk with the professional staff about providing a little written report, or we would invite you back at the close of all of the DAS hearings.
At your pleasure, whichever.
Okay. And you, so this is it.
That's it.
Okay. Any questions for Dr. Goldberg? I think just to make this clear, Dr. Goldberg, rather than having you develop a written work product, we just invite you back at the end of the hearing.
Great.
Okay. Any questions for Dr. Goldberg?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That finishes then your piece, so we won't see you again.
Okay.
until the end. I'm trying to get you back at work, Doctor, not have you sitting here in a hearing. All right, this now brings us to the end of our time together today. We will start the Budget Management Division budget request with Mr. Hill first thing in the morning. I know that one of the panel has some specific issues that they'd like to address. And so in the absence of any additional questions from the committee, I am going to close.